tell of the great Redeemer, who is doing so much for me. With what joy I tell the story of the love that makes men free. Till my earthly life is ended,
I will sing
songs above.
Then beside the crystal sea,
more and more my soul shall be praising Jesus and his love.
He is everything to me, and everything shall always be.
I will never cease to raise a song of gladness in his praise. Here and in the world above, my song shall sing of saving love. Life and light and joy is he, the precious friend who died for me. Glory be to him forever, endless praises to Christ the Lamb. He has filled my life with sunshine, he has made me what I am. Oh, that everyone would know him,
oh, that all would adore.
Oh, that all would trust the love
of the mighty friend above, and be his forevermore.
He is everything.
He is everything to me, and everything shall always be. I will never cease to raise a song of gladness in his praise. Here and in the world above, my soul shall sing of saving love. Life and light and joy is he, the precious friend who died for me.
Welcome to another Bible lesson brought by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 2 Peter 3, verses 10 and 11 we read, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also, and the works that are therein, shall be burned up. Seeing then that all of these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness?" So here the Bible is warning us there's coming a time when all the things that we now know on this earth are going to be destroyed, going to be burned up. And when that time comes, there's going to be a great judgment of the people as to who should go to heaven and who should not go to heaven. And so he says, seeing that these things are going to be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in all holy conversation and godliness? What kind of a life should we be living in view of the fact that this is going to happen? And we learn the kind of a life we should live by studying the Bible. Join us today in our Bible study.
My God and I go in the field together. We walk and talk as good friends should and do. We clasp our hands, our voices ring with laughter. My God and I walk through the meadows hue. We clasp our hands, our voices ring with laughter. My God and I walk through the meadows hue.
He tells me of the years that went before me, when heavenly plans were made for me to be, when all was but a dream of dim conception, to come to life, earth's verdant glory see.
When all was but a dream of dim conception, to come to life, as verdant glory see.
My God and I will go for a together. We'll walk and talk as good friends should and do. This earth will pass, and with it common trifles. But God and I will go unendingly.
This earth will pass, and with it common trifles. But God and I will go unendingly.
But God and I will go on endlessly.
As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're still in the 41st chapter, and our last study had gotten us down to the 9th verse. The setting here is that Joseph is still in Egypt as a prisoner in Potiphar's prison. He's been there for over 2 years now, and although he is still a prisoner himself and is not free to go, he has been made in charge of the prisoners. He is evidently the top man among the prisoners. And while here, two of the king's officers had been cast into prison. One was the butler and one was the baker. And they had been accused of a crime for which one was guilty and one was innocent. And while they were waiting the result of the investigation, they each had a dream. The butler dreamed that things came out well for him, and the baker dreamed that things didn't come out well for him, but Joseph interpreted the dream. The only person that could be found to interpret this dream was Joseph. And he interpreted them accurately, and sure enough, precisely as the dreams had said on the three-day period, one man was released and exonerated and put back on the job, the butler, and the baker was hanged. But Joseph asked this butler if he would remember him when he got back to Pharaoh's court. And he stated, I'm an innocent man. I've done no crime to be here. I was taken out of the land of the Hebrews and sold here as a slave. And by mentioning the fact that he came from the land of the Hebrews, Joseph understood the promise to Abraham, understood the promise that they were all living under, and that this land of Canaan was the land of the Hebrews eventually. And so he asked the butler to do him this favor. But when the butler got back, he probably forgot about Joseph, and so Joseph stayed another 2 years in the prison. Well, one day the Pharaoh had a dream, and he dreamed that there were 7 well-favored fat cows came up out of the river. They fed in a meadow, and 7 other skinny cows came up and stood by them on the brink of the river, and the skinny cows ate the fat cows. And he didn't know what it meant. He woke up from the dream. Then he had another dream, and that dream showed that there were 7 ears of corn on this one stalk. There were good ears. And behold, there were 7 thin ears, blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them, and the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 good ears. And Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. And he wondered what happened. And verse 8 says, it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. This was a dream, no doubt, given as a vision by God to indicate to Pharaoh what was going to happen. And these men who might have used evil spirits or some way to interpret dreams had no power to interpret this dream at all. Then, after these things happened, this butler, this chief butler of Pharaoh, who had been released from prison 2 years before, he suddenly had a memory come back to him. He suddenly remembered that there was a man in prison who had done this very thing, interpret dreams for him and the ill-fated baker, and that his interpretation was accurate. So verse 8, then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. I just remember there's something I overlooked. I have a fault here. I should have remembered this and taken care of this long before, but I've forgotten about it. So it's actually a fault of mine, and I remember it now. So he starts to tell the story to the Pharaoh just as it happened. In verse 10, he says, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream, and one night, I and he, we dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was, me he restored into mine office, and him he hanged. So this is the story that the butler gives to Pharaoh about his experience in the prison. And so, after having this astonishing return of memory, if we remember Joseph, he knew how well Joseph had been able to interpret his dream and that of the baker. he knew the results had been precisely fulfilled. He should long ago have called Pharaoh's attention to such an unusual and potentially valuable man, a man who was there regularly in a state of innocence. He hadn't done any crime to be in that prison. It was the false charges that Potiphar's wife had made against him that caused him to be there. But he'd just simply been too busy. He had forgotten. And so he confessed this shortcoming to Pharaoh, and he gave the story of the two-year-old occasion to him. He told very plainly to Pharaoh how both he and the chief baker had been imprisoned in Potiphar's prison. He told Pharaoh about their dreams in prison. And the young men of the Hebrews, Potiphar's servant, had been the only one able to give an interpretation of the dream. They couldn't find anyone who could interpret his dreams. And only this young man could interpret it. And his interpretation had been very accurate, correct right down to the very detail. 3 days later, exactly as he had predicted, the butler had been restored and the baker was hanged. Here was a man who had more insight into the future than all the sages and interpreters of the land of Egypt. And if Pharaoh really wanted to know the meaning of his dream, he should by all means get this young man named Joseph. Remember now, when Joseph went to interpret the dream, he gave all the credit to God. In Genesis 40, verse 8, when they asked Joseph to interpret these dreams, they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." So Joseph says very plainly that the interpretation of these dreams belong to God. This is something that comes from the power of God. So whatever interpretation he gave on the dream would be something coming from God. It wasn't coming from Joseph. The other man in Bible history who was allowed to interpret the dreams of a king and to predict the future was Daniel. In Daniel 2, verses 27 and 28, Daniel was here before Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar had a dream and was finding someone to try to interpret the dream, and nobody could interpret it. And verse 27, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the vision of thy head upon thy bed are these." And then he proceeded to interpret the dream. But here the point is that Daniel expressly stated that the God in heaven would be the one who could give the interpretation of the dream. So both men give God the credit for interpreting the dream. They didn't have any ability to do this, but the ability that God gave them let them interpret the dreams. So verses 14 through 16 say, "Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself, and changed his raiment, and came in unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it, and I have heard of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not me, God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." So here again, Joseph very strongly states that it's going to be God who gives the answer. So as the butler had recommended, Pharaoh sent for Joseph. And though he might have normally thought this was a stoop below his dignity to have to seek help from a Hebrew, especially from a Hebrew who was in jail for some crime he didn't know what, and he now had nowhere else to turn, so he simply had to know what the dream meant, so he sent for Joseph immediately. And the Egyptians, according to some of the historians like Herodotus, had extreme care for cleanliness, and thus the men would let their hair and beard grow only during periods of mourning. Joseph, therefore, had to allow himself to be shaved and also to be dressed in suitable clothing to make an appearance at the court. All this was done in a hasty manner because Pharaoh was anxiously waiting. Finally, Joseph stood before Pharaoh, this young foreigner, who had a lot of zeal, who had a lot of faith, who certainly was not pessimistic about things. He had a lot of optimism, and he'd been a slave for 13 years, and here he's standing in the presence of the most powerful monarch in the world. Joseph, however, was there because of God's providence, and his God was the very creator of the world, before whom Pharaoh himself was nothing but dust, and so Joseph is certainly in good hands. Just as you and I, as we serve the true God of the creation, as we serve the one and only living God, we're in good hands with God. That's the way Joseph was here, even though he was in the court of Pharaoh, and Pharaoh could have done anything that he wanted to order to have done to this man. He could have him put back in prison. He could have had his head cut off. He could do anything he wanted. But Joseph was very safe because he was in the hands of God, and God had a purpose for all this happening. And let me at this point also remind you that each of us on this earth have a purpose here. We're here for a reason. We're not some accident. We didn't just happen to come along, and there's no reason or purpose or any kind of intent behind any of it. There's a reason for us being here. God wants us to serve Him. We may not fulfill the reason. We may absolutely miss totally the mark for which we've been put here. But there's a reason for it. We're serving God. We should be serving God. And God has a purpose for us. And so just as Joseph is standing here before this ruler of a great empire, even so, our actions, although they may seem to be much more humble, are here for a purpose. Well, back to our story. Pharaoh proceeded immediately to tell Joseph his problem. He dreamed a dream which he felt to be of great importance, had some kind of a great message, but he had been unable to find anyone who could interpret the dream. Then, to his surprise and joy, actually, he'd heard marvelous reports about Joseph, how Joseph could interpret dreams, and so he understood that Joseph could be told any dream and he could correctly interpret it. And Joseph might have been very flattered to have been addressed so greatly by none other than the Pharaoh himself, to have been built up like this. And of course, these flattering words of Pharaoh could just simply be a way to try and test Joseph. Proverbs 27, verse 21 says, "As the finding pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise." And what he's saying here in Proverbs is that when we're praised, we're being put in the finding pot, we're being put under the fire, we're being given the test to see if we are genuine or not. Because the praise is going to bring out the imitation. The praise is going to bring out the haughtiness in us. The part that's not genuine will come forth when we are praised. And so that's where the test is. And Joseph being put to a test here. And so he could have been real flattered. And he might have even been tempted to bargain with Pharaoh and say, "Well, I'll tell you the dream if," and use this power some way that God didn't intend it. He was possessed of a unique ability, and this ability was in high demand right at this very moment. He could at least have gotten a promise for his freedom and maybe even been given a fee for his service in returning for granting Pharaoh's request. Instead, however, he quickly confessed that he himself had no prophetic ability at all. If he'd had success in the past of understanding dreams and interpreting them, it was simply because of God, the God that he believed in, the true and living God, the God who had given the meaning to him. He says in verse 16, "It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." So the answer doesn't really come from me. It's God that's going to give the answer. And of course, God will get the credit for whatever interpretation is given here. This will be glory to God. As we have in the prayer that Jesus gave to his disciples, "Hallowed be thy name. Let God's name be hallowed. Let God's name be glory. His is the honor and the glory and the power forever." And Pharaoh wouldn't be disappointed here real suddenly and think he'd made a mistake, Joseph assured him that God himself would indeed give Pharaoh the meaning of the dreams. Indeed, he had sent him the dreams for the very purpose of preparing him for the future. God intended to give Pharaoh an answer of peace. That is an answer which, in spite of the great troubles that were surely coming on the land of Egypt, the answer would give him the power to be prepared for them and to endure these troubles in peace. So this answer was going to not only help Pharaoh and the land of Egypt, but it would also eventually help the children of Israel, as they were now in the land of Canaan and fixing to undergo the same troubles with this drought that Egypt would have. And so Joseph here gives an answer that shows that he had had a lot of growth in spiritual maturity since the time of his own dream back in Canaan. He wasn't bragging now. He wasn't boasting now. He wasn't vaunting his position now at all. Then he had antagonized his family by calling attention to his own superiority. Then he had aggravated them by giving them the interpretation of his dreams of how he was going to be superior. He had chided them by wearing this coat of many colors. he had certainly tried their patience by running back to his father and telling what they were doing and tattling on them. But here we see that he has won the confidence and respect of this heathen king and this court by denying his own ability and giving full credit to the Lord. His years of slavery and imprisonment had indeed taught him a good lesson. He'd learned humility and patience now. This time wasn't lost time. It wasn't time spent for no good reason. This had now changed a boy into a man. This had now hardened the iron and taken the dross out. He'd now been tried by the prison, tried by the time he spent here, tried by the humility he was forced to endure, and tried by the praise the king gave him to see how and he would actually take this praise to see if it would be something that would bring out the true, genuine Joseph. So instead of calling attention to the failures of the other wise men and stressing his own powers, showing how he might be the greatest man in the nation now regarding this interpretation of dreams, he acted with very much courtesy and self-control and restraint, and he directed all praise to God alone, taking none for himself. So verses 17 through 24 say, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, In my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine fat-fleshed and well-favored, and they fed in the meadow. And behold, other seven kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored, and lean-fleshed, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. And the lean and ill-favored kine did eat up the first seven kine. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored as at the beginning, so I awoke. And I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in one stalk, full and good, and behold, seven ears withered thin and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears, and I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it unto me." So Pharaoh, here in this passage, proceeded to tell Joseph the details of both his dreams. He related the peculiar story of the triumph of the lean cows over the fat cows and the thin ears over the full ears. A few details were added which were not recorded earlier. The thin cattle were worse than any Pharaoh had ever seen in Egypt, and even after they had eaten the fat cow, they looked no better than before. The dream certainly made a deep and fearful impression upon Pharaoh. He had to feel that something bad was going to happen. So Pharaoh then once again repeated the fact that he had tried very hard to find someone who could explain the dreams, but he had not been successful. The gods of Egypt, their spokesmen, seemed helpless to interpret the dreams, and therefore must likewise be helpless to deal with the serious problems that seemed to be suggested by the dreams. If these men couldn't interpret the dreams, how are they going to deal with the problems these dreams were telling about that were going to happen? After hearing a description of the dreams, Joseph proceeds to interpret them, beginning in verse 25. "And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, The dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." Here we see that God has given to Joseph the infallible knowledge concerning the correct interpretation of these dreams. Certain implications of the dreams were, of course, almost self-evident. Egypt's great prosperity in grain and cattle was surely going to be interrupted somehow. The sevenness of the dreams only Joseph could interpret. This number represented a period of time, just as the threeness of the dreams of the butler and baker had represented 3 days. In this case, there were 7 years represented by the respective groups of seven. The fact that the dream had been given to Pharaoh twice, just as Joseph's earlier dream had been repeated to him twice with different figures, was explained by him to show that God was fully assuring that these dreams would be fulfilled according to these predictions, and that God would begin to do this very soon. Joseph insisted at least four times that all of this had come from God. Verses 16, 25, 28, and 32. God had sent the dream, God had given the interpretation, and God would bring it all to pass. The seven healthy cattle, as well as the seven full ears of grain, represented seven wonderful years of full productivity and prosperity that was coming on the land of Egypt. The seven ugly cattle, as well as the seven thin ears, on the other hand, represented seven bitter years of famine that would follow on the years of plenty. The bad years, furthermore, would be so bad that the years of prosperity would be altogether forgotten. The famine would, Joseph said, consume the land and be very grievous. And Joseph also stressed here that the fulfillment of the double dream would not be long in coming. It would begin very shortly, and Pharaoh should not have any doubt at all about the fact that it was going to happen. Now, this would allow a wise Pharaoh to start making preparation for how to use the 7 years of plenty to be able to offset the 7 years of famine. And it was a very great blessing, a very great benefit for him to have this knowledge beforehand so he could know how to properly distribute and to preserve their harvest. Had he not known about this, they might have foolishly squandered the 7 years of plenty, and then when the 7 years of famine came, there would be no way to get through it. And this is all for the purpose of preserving God's people who are still in Canaan yet, a people that Pharaoh knows very little about, but that's the great purpose here that God has in mind. We must close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
Can he? Could he? Would he? Did he? Can he? Could he? Would he? Yes, he can. He could. He would, and he did. Oh, can he? Could he? Would he? Did he? Can he? Could he? Would he? Yes, he can. He could. He would, and he did. From the moment I heard about the Lord and His Word, well, it seemed a bit too good to be true. There were questions and doubts, I tried to figure it out, but the best that I could do was to wander around in the love that I'd found until my questions started answering themselves. Singing, can he, could he, would he, yes, he can, he could, he would, and he did. Can he, could he, would he, did he? Can he, could he, would he, yes, he can, he could, he would, and he did.
You can say you don't know, it's necessarily so, like somebody said he wants in a song.
You can think what you choose, but let me tell you the news, the Lord has loved you all along. So if you're asking again, will the doubts ever end? Simply trust him and you'll see for yourself. Singing, can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did. Oh, can he, could he, would he, did he? Can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did. Oh, can he, could he, would he, did he? Can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did. Can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did.
Let him tell you what the Savior did.
Can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did.
Oh, what my Jesus did.
Can he, could he, would he, yes he can, he could, he would, and he did.